Welcome to this debate featuring four of the five Republican candidates for North Dakota's U.S. House seat on the News and Views Radio Network. Voters will make their selection in the primary on June 11th. Joining us in the KFGO building in South Fargo are Alex Balazs, Rick Becker, Julie Fedorchek, and Cara Mund. I should mention that Charlotte Moore of Williston did not accept our invitation to participate. I'm KFGO News Director Paul Jurgens. Joining me in moderating this debate are longtime Fargo TV reporter, news director, and now former columnist Jim Shaw, and Amy Dalrymple, a former reporter and editor of the Bismarck Tribune. She's now the editor of the North Dakota Monitor, the state's newest online news publication. Candidates will get 1 minute opening statements and closing statements, 1 minute answers, and 30-second rebuttals. By luck of the draw, Julie Fedorchek will be answering the first question, or making the first opening statement, I should say, and Jim Shaw will open the questioning of the four candidates in this debate. Julie Fedorchek, would you like to begin with your opening statement?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you, KFGO, for hosting this debate, and good morning to the moderators, my fellow candidates, and to all the North Dakotans across the state listening. This race really comes down to three things. First of all, who has the experience to step right in and do the job? Secondly, who is strong enough to stand up to the liberals in D.C., like Nancy Pelosi and AOC? And finally, who do you trust to be the lone voice for North Dakota in the U.S. House? I'm the only candidate with a proven track record of conservative results. I have saved North Dakotans $50 million in utility rate increases. I've pushed back on Obama and Biden in their efforts to shut down Dakota Access Pipeline, and I have consistently fought the EPA efforts to fight and shut down our fossil fuel industries, including two efforts this last week. I am the candidate with a proven track record, a conviction, and the results, and the experience to do this job best for North Dakota, and I hope North Dakotans will give me their vote.
Thank you. Alex Balazs.
Hi, good morning, North Dakotans. I'm Alex Balazs. Yeah, just take a moment here to thank all the men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice as we go into this Memorial Day weekend that allowed us to be here today and speak freely and have the freedom to do this kind of debate. As the GOP-endorsed candidate going into this on the campaign trail, the number one and two and three and probably four things I hear are people want to secure the border, they want to cut our debt, they want to limit big government, and they are concerned about our foreign policy overseas. So if you're talking about experience, I'm the only candidate that served on the southern border and worked to secure it. The only candidate who worked in Washington to control budgets and ran projects and kept that budget under control. The only one with foreigner experience overseas. And the only one who served in the military. So you've got a choice coming on June 11th. You've got to decide what experience you're going to send to Washington. You got one vote that day, and you get one vote in Washington. And I'm asking you for your vote on June 11th. Thank you.
Cara Mund.
Good morning, North Dakota. I'm Cara Mund, born and raised in Bismarck, Mandan. I am a proud product of the North Dakota public school system, where I was then able to go to Brown University and Harvard Law School. You likely know me as the first and only Miss America from the state of North Dakota, but I'm also a practicing attorney. I want to thank KFGO, my opponents, and the moderators. Throughout this debate, you're going to hear that all of us support key issues such as protecting and securing the border, combating inflation, energy independence, and reduced reckless spending. However, I am the only candidate in this race who will protect, not cut, Social Security, Medicare, and veterans benefits. The only candidate who will uphold law and order by ensuring that no one is above the law, and the only candidate advocating for limited government by keeping the government out of your doctor's appointments and supporting women's reproductive health care. I am proud to be the only true moderate in this race of four other far right candidates.
Dr. Rick Becker.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Rick Becker. Originally from Mandan, living in Bismarck, and I was a state legislator for 10 years. And as a principled conservative legislator, I voted no on a lot of bills, usually because I was opposed to government overreach or overspending. But I'd rather say what I'm for. I am pro-life, I'm pro-border wall, pro-property rights, pro-farmer, pro-oil, gas, and coal, pro-law enforcement, pro-Second Amendment. I'm pro not spending more than we have, and I'm America first. I'm consistent in my conservative principles, and I never stop fighting for them, and that's exactly what I will do in D.C.
Thank you. We'll begin our questioning now with Jim Shaw.
Thank you, Paul. Candidates, if you were a member of Congress in 2021, would you have voted to certify Joe Biden as the winner of the presidential election? And if elected, will you promise to vote to certify the results of the 2024 presidential election, no matter who wins?
We'll just direct it to Julie Fedorchak.
Thank you for that question. Well, obviously, election integrity is at the crux of your question there, Jim. And North Dakotans and the Americans have to believe in the integrity of our elections. We have some of the best elections in North Dakota. And there were questions in the last election about voting. And balloting and counting and all kinds of concerns across the country. I'm not going to go back in time because I wasn't in that I wasn't in Congress in 2021, and I'm not going to talk about what I would have done or wouldn't have done. I will look at the situation at hand and see what's justified and what isn't. But quite honestly, the most important thing is having elections that people can trust. It is the foundation of our democracy, and we have to be able to ensure election integrity in this country. I think there was a lot of lessons learned in the last election, and I hope that in this election moving forward, we won't have those same issues.
Thanks, Jim. So the question you're asking is real emotional because people get all upset about it, and it's great for a soundbite because you can say, yes or no, would you affirm the election results, and then everybody gets all upset about it. So let's just be clear about this. You have a responsibility to vote to keep election integrity and to make Americans understand they're going to trust those elections. So the answer is yes. In 2024, I'm going to vote to affirm whatever the voters bring to Congress and through the Electoral College. And the same thing would have happened in 2021. And people out there listening to this radio show can say, wait, you should vote against it, and we should push you back to the states. And that is a process. But we didn't push it back to the states, or I wasn't there, but they didn't push it back to the states. So therefore, your job would be to vote and tell the people that you're going to have a smooth transition of government. And the second thing that does, for people that don't understand overseas, it tells the rest of the nations around the world that we have a smooth transition of government. We're not a banana republic that can't get things right when it comes to the hard votes, and we keep our people together, and we go forward unified.
Caramund.
Yeah, I have to agree with Alex. As the only attorney here in this race, it is our duty under both the 12th Amendment and the 20th Amendment. When you look at the Electoral College, Joe Biden had 306 versus, I think it was 232. So it is our duty as North Dakota's lone voice. So in 2020, I would have certified the election. In 2024, the same is true. Whoever gets the most electoral votes under the Constitution, and as someone who is the only candidate on this panel who's actually taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, I will also do that. And I hope Julie takes the opportunity to actually answer the question, because Jim has posed if we are in that position in 2020. And I think it's important that North Dakotans actually know how she would have voted in 2020.
Rick Becker.
So it's a very interesting problem. And I can tell you that I would go along with what Ted Cruz suggested. We do need to maintain election integrity. We do need to do what our responsibilities are as a congressman. But there were questions brought up to the Supreme Court, court cases that we did not know. There was a period of time in which we did not know if the Supreme Court was going to take it up. In my mind, to delay the vote, not whether to certify or not certify, but to delay until we knew when the Supreme Court was going to take up those cases would have been prudent. Because if the Supreme Court had taken up those cases and expedited them, I would not want to have a constitutional crisis on our hands where after an election was certified, then the delegates, or the electors rather, may have been decertified. So a vote for the delay, as Senator Ted Cruz had suggested, is where I would have gone.
Can I ask a follow-up? Or do you want, should we ask for a rebuttal first, and then I'll ask a follow-up?
Yeah, if anybody has anything to...
I'm good.
Jim, go ahead.
All right, so here's my follow-up question. As most of you know, there were about 60 lawsuits challenging the fairness of the 2020 presidential election. They were thrown out. Chris Krebs, President Trump's 2020 Director of Election Cybersecurity, called the 2020 election the most secure in American history. Donald Trump's Attorney General, William Barr, said there was no evidence of widespread voter fraud that would have changed the outcome of the election. So for those of you who have questions about election integrity or feel that the 2020 race should have been delayed in its certification, can you please specify as to what those specific concerns are, given the lawsuits and the comments by Mr. Krebs and Mr. Barr?
Anyone want to take that?
I'll just say, here's the deal, Jim. Most Americans aren't focusing in on all the specifics of the, you know, these reports and these in-depth studies, et cetera. People have to have faith in the election process. That's something that you can't, you know, just dismiss by, you know, this study or that study. There was, you know, delays in vote counting. There were missing ballots. There was all kinds of different discrepancies that occurred in the last election that raised people's concerns. And our job as leaders is to acknowledge those concerns, respect them, and do our very best to address the concerns that they have and make sure that people have faith in the election process that's happening. And it is the foundation of our democracy. So we have to do better. And I think we've learned from the past election. And I believe that we'll see a different result this time around.
I want to respond. I do believe you need to have faith, but it is the responsibility of our elected officials to look at the evidence. There was no evidence of this. It went to the court. You know, when you have people questioning it, who was it? It was the elected officials who started raising the questions. And again, Julie is not answering whether or not she would have certified it. And I think this is important for the North Dakota voters to hear, because who are you sending to Washington? Someone who's going to potentially, you know, take our democracy down, raise questions just so that whoever's in their campaign commercial is who takes leadership? Or are you going to take someone to Washington who really does bring truth, transparency, accountability? That's what North Dakota needs as a sole voice and someone who represents all.
I'll respond to that just briefly. I will definitely go to Washington and bring the same approach I've taken to my 32 years of very devoted public service in North Dakota, and that is I'm going to recognize all the facts on the ground and make my best decision based on those facts. And that's my pledge to North Dakotans. That's what I've done. That's why I have the most endorsements of anybody in this race, because I'm trusted and I'm proven, and I base my decisions on the facts on the ground, and I'm not going to just go through a million different what ifs here today. I will base my decision on the facts on the ground at the time.
Julie, based on the facts on the ground at the time, would you certify the 2020 election?
I don't think that we're allowed to ask each other questions in this debate, so I don't know.
She's not answering the question.
I did answer the question. I said I would base it on the facts on the ground, and I wasn't on the ground looking at all those facts, Sankara.
The facts as we know them right now, I would have certified it, and you will not answer the question.
Jim, I'll also address your question. The way it's framed, though, I think underscores a strong bias. Of course, the 2020 election, which President Trump lost, you state is the most secure election we've ever had. And
Chris Krebs said that, President Trump's cybersecurity election.
Sure, a person said that. You quoted a person saying that. In 2016, when President Trump won, then supposedly there's all sorts of election integrity problems. So rather than play into the narrative of trying to rehash this whole Trump thing, I'd much rather start discussing the things that people in North Dakota are concerned about.
So y'all take a shot at this. So for all the voters out there, Democrat and Republican, you need to understand that you've got to get together on this to have voter and election integrity. You simply have to get over it. It's going to be hard to hear that message, but you need to take the next step. You need to go to the polls. You need to start asking representatives for paper ballots to vote on voting day and stop all this mess of mail-in stuff except for absentee ballots. And if you're strong enough to do that as voters, then you're going to get to a clean election. And you're going to stop mucking about with talking about things that happened 4 years ago, which are just destructive to our nation. That's where you got to go. It's hard to hear that. That's how you stop your kids from fighting in the kitchen, okay?
Our next question will come from Amy Dalrymple of the North Dakota Monitor.
Well, just to follow up on what you just commented on, could each candidate talk about whether you support hand counting of ballots for North Dakota elections?
Yeah. You have to be able to hand count the ballots, at least in a recount, right? So you have to have ballots to count. So if you look at a couple of the states that have voted or had people put in measures that stop the keeping of paper ballots, and we only have machines, that's preposterous. You can't do that. You're going to have something to recount. And there's nothing wrong with that. So there's a myth out there that you can't count paper ballots, but somehow we managed to do it with delegates, and we managed to do it when we're looking at our caucuses. So we need to get back to it. So part of it is getting the media and people out there to put the information out that we can do this, okay? And we need more of that. But it's for us to do it too. Was that my... Oh, yeah, sorry. Thanks. So the other piece of that is look at the structure. Get the polling places back. I was down in Gwinner the other day, and they don't even have polling places anymore. Their legislators have taken those out, and all they can do is do mailing ballots. You know why? Because they told them it's too expensive. It's too expensive to defend the one thing, the one right and responsibility that keeps our nation free. We can't vote on voting day, but we tell every other nation in the world to do it. So keep the polls open from 6 to 12 if you have to. Make it a national holiday if you have to, but let's get there and vote because it is your responsibility. You should honor these people that gave the sacrifice.
Tara?
Yes, I agree. It is your responsibility to vote. Your voice matters, and that's why it's really crucial in this primary that you do go out and vote on June 11th. I would support hand-counting ballots. I think the more evidence we have to prove that this is a very trustworthy process, that the winner is the legitimate winner, it's just more evidence to prove in the event that this does go to the courts, and the more evidence you have, the more just that people can accept the decision.
Yeah, I fully support the ability to hand count. I would like to see paper ballots required in all circumstances. People of North Dakota, people all throughout the United States need to know, they need to be confident that their elections are secure and that every legal vote has been counted. And this is underscored in the recent NDGOP convention, the state convention. We voted on resolutions, and two of the resolutions were found after the fact to not have passed. How? Because they were able to go back and hand count paper ballots. That's how we make sure that our elections are secure.
I also would support hand counting through paper ballots, but I think one of the big issues, not so much in North Dakota, because we have some of the best election integrity in the nation, but nationally, one of the issues is voter IDs. And I think that, you know, we definitely should require people to have an ID for voting. We require IDs for many other things, purchasing alcohol, a whole bunch of different requirements under law in our society. And so having an ID when you show up to vote is a basic fundamental, and I think we need to also install that, not just in North Dakota, but I would support that nationwide.
I'm out of order, but would any of the candidates prefer voter registration in North Dakota, the last state, without it? I'll just go down the line and see if it's something that should be considered.
I think, I support our elections the way they are today. I appreciate that in North Dakota, it's easy to vote, and you can show up, and you can, and there aren't a lot of barriers other than requiring an ID. And so I don't think we're at that point yet.
I remember running for federal office, so I still get a say in it because I vote in North Dakota. So there's arguments for voter registration because it keeps people from flipping over at the primaries and voting for one and influencing elections. So some people would say, yeah, we should have voter registration so that you vote one way or another. And that's a valid argument. Does it take away from people that want to have that right to do it? Yeah, so maybe we need to make it as free as possible. And the other piece is it goes down to this, what the states want at the Secretary of State level. But I got to address this issue of voter integrity. There are people out there who want to test the machines, okay, one more time. They want to run a random test on these machines at a couple polling places. And they're not going to be allowed to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Your elected officials, and especially your appointed officials, should say, you know what, if it helps 100 voters or one voter get to the polling place, then we're going to run a test on these machines when they're installed at the polling places. Okay, it's not enough to say, hey, we did it back in the factory. And I say that because you're asking them to trust you. So take the extra measure, the extra $5, and test them one more time. Because then you're going to tell people, we care about what you say.
Carl?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize we're the only state in the country that does not require voter registration. And it does. It eliminates barriers for individuals to be able to have their voice heard. And so for that, I support our decision not to have voter registration.
Dr. Becker.
Yes, I like that we're the last state. I kind of like that uniqueness. But I will tell you that I am concerned about one party crossing over to influence the primary of the other party. And we know that upwards of 20,000 Democrats crossed over in 2016. And the tendency then is, of course, to pick the candidate which is most like that which would be your own party. And the primary is supposed to be to determine the ideal candidate for the party in both circumstances, the Republican and the Democrat. So when we have crossover, it just what it boils down to is we don't get the candidate that is representing the Republican the way Republicans would have hoped for. So I think I am in favor of it reluctantly. I do like the uniqueness.
You are listening to a live congressional debate. North Dakota's Republican candidates on the primary ballot. Four of the five candidates are in our KFGO studios in South Fargo on the News and Views radio network. We will return shortly with more questioning with myself, Paul Juergens, the news director at KFGO, Jim Shaw, a former columnist, and Amy Dalrymple from the North Dakota Monitor. Amy Dalrymple has the next question here.
Thank you. With all the debate that's going on right now in Congress about the Farm Bill, wondering how you would work to resolve those differences to get a Farm Bill approved. And I'll start with you, Cara.
Yeah. What's fascinating to me is I ran in this race in 2022, and at that point, the Farm Bill was top of mind. It was a hotly contested issue that Representative Armstrong and I debated. And here we are 2 years later, and we still haven't passed a Farm Bill. This just shows how crucial it is to have a moderate voice in the House, someone who's willing to cross over and talk to both sides of the aisle. North Dakota gets one sole voice out of 435. It's not the candidate that you know exactly how they're going to vote, the candidate who's not willing to budge and to compromise. If we really want to advocate for North Dakota farmers and ranchers, if we want to ensure that they have crop insurance, that they have the protections that they have, we must elect a moderate or someone who's willing to actually compromise. And I'm the only candidate, again, in this race who hasn't advertised with Donald Trump. And we don't know who's going to win in November. And so you need to elect someone who's going to work across the aisle. And that is how I will be the strongest voice out of my opponents.
Rick.
Yes, with the Farm Bill, we know agriculture is the backbone of North Dakota. We know how important it is. We know how important the safety net is for our farmers. However, the Farm Bill is, the majority of it, doesn't even deal with agriculture or farmers. And there is a lot of concern regarding how bloated the SNAP program has become. And I think what we can do is find a coalition to say, you know, maybe we need to pull back on some of this. Maybe we've gone too far, starting with the Obama administration, and then now again with Biden administration. Let's start to look at how we can, number one, ensure that our farmers are secure, but number two, start to cut the waste and inefficiency and abuse of the various programs on both sides, on the agriculture and the non-agriculture side. That can be done in a manner that still keeps farmers whole, keeps farms healthy, and is actually better, not only for the farmers, but for the American taxpayer. So I'm willing to work across the aisle. I'm willing to work with more moderates in my own party. We have to get this done. We can't dither on it. We can remain principled, but we can get it done.
Julie. Thank you. I'm really excited to be a strong voice for rural America and our farmers and ranchers in D.C. Farming and agriculture account for $31 billion of annual economic activity and one in five jobs in North Dakota. So we need a firm leader who's going to support one of the most important issues for farmers, and that is crop insurance. And that's where Rick Becker has been very soft. You cannot, I asked a banker last week when I was in Grafton if he's ever given a loan to a farmer without crop insurance, and he said, never seen it happen. I've never seen somebody come in with me. The truth is, it is the number one risk management tool that our farmers depend on, and we have to be firm in supporting that. Getting a good Farm Bill passed requires relationships with both urban and rural legislators. And I have a long track record of working with people from diverse backgrounds to form the kind of coalitions and solutions needed to get good policy done. I've done that as the leader of our national organization of regulators, and I'm going to do that as North Dakota's lone voice in Congress advocating for our farmers and ranchers.
Alex.
Thanks. I'm going to disagree that you need a moderate in Congress to push this bill through and get it done right. What you need is a conservative who has experience working in Washington with other people and across the agencies. So here's some things you need to look at with the farm bill. It's bloated the way it is right now. We know we want to get SNAP and maybe WIC pulled out of it. You have to do some hard conversations with people back there and start pulling people together to get those programs placed where they belong, which is in Health and Human Services. No one wants to touch that, but they can manage it better. It shouldn't be in the farm bill. The other piece is, why don't we address the elephant in the room and say, why are insurance sellers getting 10% profit on those plans instead of the 6% you get nationally on an insurance plan? And the last piece is, you simply have to step into this farm bill. And have you read the bill yet? Look, I'm 900 pages into a 1,200-page bill, all right? That's what they put out. And you can cut out whole-of-government approach. Why is there election integrity in this bill? What is the Biden administration, and probably Obama running behind him, put in this bill that we need to pull out that is not agriculture? And we need to look at that and take it out, and we'll save money on that. And we'll still support the farmers. We're definitely doing farm insurance.
Rick Becker.
Yes. So I'd like to rebut something that was said earlier. So the crop insurance program, I've been very strong on that. So my words have been twisted by opposition intentionally to manipulate the voters. But I'll tell you this. Improving the crop insurance program is going to be good for the farmer, because if we can cut waste and abuse, do things like enterprise units, implement the actively engaged in farming protocol, there are a number of things we can do that will reduce the needless or abusive payouts. Reducing the payouts will reduce the cost of premiums. Reducing the cost of premiums is good for the farmer and for the taxpayer. Those are easy solutions.
Yeah, I got to say, I talked to Doug about this, Doug Goring about this, and it's not about waste. There's simply not enough waste out there and fraud in the farm insurance or crop insurance that's going to make a difference. But what is going to make a difference is restructuring and applying that so farmers can apply for the right thing. And usually what we see is we see wasted cost and wasted expense and getting the wrong crop insurance for different farmers. So that's what needs to be addressed before we even start talking about some small savings in fraud.
I'd like to just say, it's great for Rick Becker to remodel himself in this way to be pro crop insurance, but he has been on record saying he doesn't think it's necessary in the past, and this is just an example of what I think voters need to pay attention to. Who can you trust? Who has a record, a long record of working with others to solve problems versus just saying no? And that's been Rick's mantra in the House. And he's said that that's going to be some of the approach he takes in D.C. And that's just not going to cut it on solving some of these really big problems and getting things done for the citizens in our state in energy and agriculture.
Well, so what you're hearing are repeated talking points, a hatchet job by the establishment country club type Republicans that are part of the Uniparty. So Julie's just parroting that. What we're talking about is having good conversation, talking about the inefficiencies of every federal government program out there and trying to improve on those efficiencies. I have talked in the past about how a model which would be a hybrid that included some private insurers would be good. Now, that's something that the North Dakota Farm Bureau actually supports. So, again, you can try and take comments out of context intentionally to mislead voters. That's the typical uniparty country club Republican approach. That's not what North Dakota wants.
Actually, no, that's not at all what this. This is a record. This is how, this is people's approach to governing. Rick never once talked to my agency. He voted against our budget time and again, and never once did he sit down and say, here's what I don't like about it. Here's where I think you should save money. He's never done what he just said he's going to do. He doesn't have that kind of record. That's not the kind of legislator he has been. That's why 55 of the legislators that he worked with have endorsed me, because he doesn't work with people. That's not his approach.
All right, I'll do the final one on that. It looks like you want to cut away, but I want to point out that my approach has worked very well, and I've gotten a lot of great things passed. And yes, I have voted against the Public Service Commission's budget because it was bloated by Julie and the others with unnecessary government programs that were redundant. You bet. I voted no against the government bloat that you sponsored to save taxpayers' dollars.
Absolutely. That is actually pretty funny because the PSC budget is very far from bloated, and this program that he's talking about is a rail safety program that actually diverted money that already was being spent into this program and has reduced rail accidents in North Dakota by 50% since it was created. These are the things I would have loved to have talked to Representative Becker when he was in the legislature about, so he would have the facts on which to base his decision, which he never did, because that's not his style, and that's why we can't trust him to do this and be our one voice in Congress.
I just want to highlight, Julie said that she would have liked to talk to Rick. It's a two-way street, and you can't just rely on people to come to you. And as a representative, there's going to be information that you may not be getting. You might be hearing from another, or you might be hearing from one side but not the other. And so it is your job to seek out the information. And if you're trying to get a budget passed, you need to be an advocate for it. You can't rely on other people to come to you.
I would like to move on if we've covered that ground, I think. At least two of you, Commissioner Fedorchak and Dr. Becker, have pledged unwavering support for former President Trump in media and in elsewhere. Last week, Governor Burgum attended the former president's trial in New York and later called the trial a scam and a sham. Do you agree with that assessment? And Dr. Becker, should Mr. Trump even be on trial in this case?
Well, there are a number of allegations. There are multiple trials and prosecutions, and it's hard to take them all apart and discuss the merits of each. I can tell you that I think the American people agree with me. This is a sham. There is a weaponization of the bureaucratic government agencies with the Department of Justice, and they are doing a railroad job on President Trump. There's no doubt about that. I think as the evidence continues to come to light, that is being underscored. And if we want to avoid being a banana republic, we cannot allow that to happen. They're trying to do it to Trump. If they can do it to Trump, they can do it to any of us.
I'm actually going to agree with Rick on that one. It is a sham. It is a two-tiered justice system. And quite honestly, I think it's a distraction. It's a great distraction from the terrible results of Biden and his horrible leadership for our country. And so this is a distraction to take away from the fact that there's been 8 million people walk into this country illegally, that there's terrorists, there's drug cartels that have come into our communities because he's just ignored the border. It's a distraction away from the inflation that is crushing our families and people going to the grocery store, the gas pump to pay every day. People are paying more, and this is a direct result of Biden's failed leadership. And it's a distraction from the growing concerns internationally because Biden has been a failure internationally as well. So it is a sham, and it's also a distraction that the media is playing into to take people's minds off of the horrible results of Joe Biden.
Alex Palaz.
Yeah, I think for the most part, these lawsuits are simply an attack so that they can keep Biden in office and keep Trump from getting there. So I'm going to support Donald Trump. And the reason why I do that is because I think right now that's the only person that can help us turn this ship and get on the right track. And for the voters out there across the board, you need to look at what's going on. Yeah, you might be happy today because someone's shouting and angry about this or about something Trump did, but that's just angertainment. And if you're going to get involved in that, you're going to forget what we need to do as a country. So what I would ask you to do is look a little deeper, see what's going on out there, and look forward to where we're going to be in another 6 months in November. So what is that, 7 months? And decide where you're going to be on these, because these lawsuits are going to go away. They're going to be found to be frivolous, or they're not going to have the information. And there's one last thing I would say, and this goes to Congress too. If you're going to hold a hearing or you're going to try to charge somebody, you better be ready to write the check. And I mean, we should take a pledge that if we're going to put a committee together to try somebody like Schiff did or these other guys, then you should say, I'm going to write the check when it doesn't go through. Otherwise, don't do it.
Ms. Mund.
Yeah. I hope the North Dakota voter listened to all three of those answers, because every one of my opponents is a puppet for Trump. This is not a distraction. These cases are not distractions. And as a lawyer, you can't bring a case as a distraction. First off, it's against your oath. And second off, these cases could have been dismissed. And I think they were attempts to dismiss it, and the court did not dismiss it. I firmly believe that Americans, all Americans across the board, are innocent until proven guilty. And no one is above the law. But when we elect leaders who undermine our court system, who support the politicization of our courts, there is a deep concern. North Dakotans don't want that. They want a leader who is going to rule with truth, transparency, accountability. And every single one of my opponents want to overlook the evidence, overlook the facts, and want to do and just be a talking head for Donald Trump. They're not here to represent North Dakotans. They're here to represent Donald Trump. And with that said, there was great Republican candidates. Nikki Haley would have been a great candidate. She never paid money to a porn star. She would have been someone we could have supported. But no, they're all going with Trump.
Jim Shaw.
Thank you. And we're going to start with Julie Fedorchuk with the answers to this question. My question is, Congress just passed and President Biden just signed into law $61 billion worth of assistance for Ukraine. If you were in Congress now, would you have voted yes or no on that bill? Julie Fedorchuk.
Thank you, Jim. I've been on record saying I would have voted for that bill. I think it's very important to play a strong role internationally in supporting our allies. We've got to push back on Putin, and we have to support the Ukrainians in their efforts to for independence and democracy. Now, that said, my way that I will look at funding on these issues moving forward is, or my methodology, is that you need to have a clear understanding of what's the objective and what's the plan and how is it going to be executed. And those are the questions that I think are really important to have answered on the front end of things when you're looking at foreign aid. We have to play a strong role internationally. We are the leaders of the free world, and we have to embrace that. International issues affect our own national security, so we have to do that, but we have to have accountability, transparency, and we have to have clear plans for how these are going to be used. And quite honestly, the problem with that and the reason why Republicans have struggled is because Biden has been so soft and so weak and hasn't had the kinds of clear direction and plans for how he's going to engage and solve these problems.
Thank you. Alex Balazs?
Yes, Jim. So the answer is yes. And Jim, really, I think we really can't do those kind of simple questions for the American voters, right? Because it wasn't $61 billion going to Ukraine and going to Zelensky. It was money going back to pay for arms that have already been used. If you look at the entire bill and read it and really explain it to the voters, which we should be doing because you should know what was in there and read it, that broken out did a whole lot of different things. So, yeah, there's pieces in there that were not good, that were written badly. And what we saw in Congress, we saw people not write the right amendments, not go after those pieces and pull those out. So that was wrong. Was H.R. 2 sitting on Schumer's desk? Yes, it was. So should we have simply stood on that? Yeah, you can say that, but it also would have held up the other stuff that they desperately needed, which was arms going forward and resupplying us and restocking our weapons here in the United States. So if you ask a more fulsome question, the answer is still yes, but I think that gets a better answer.
All right. Sorry, I have a follow-up. When I asked you that question after the Republican convention, your answer was no.
Yeah, as you're going forward, yeah.
So what changed between then and now that you've gone from a no to a yes?
Yeah, I read through the bill more. So I think the key is when the bill came to the floor, it came in three or four different parts, right? They did it the right way. So I think they did that right. And Israel was in there, and Indo-Pacific funding was in there, tied in with everything else. So when that bill comes forward, we're at a different stage of the war, aren't we? So when we were at the convention, we'd already passed a number of times, and now Ukraine's back on their heels because we failed to take steps to let NATO and other people fund them. So if you stop that kind of funding, if you stop those other people from doing it, which was what Biden did, then you reach what we continually reach with Democrats. We reach a point where we have to do something. And this is key for people to understand out there. If you understand the federal government, this has always been the case with how Democrats do politics. They wait till the last minute and they throw money at it. And that's what we ended up doing again.
Thank you. Kara Mund.
Yes. So when a funding bill comes across my desk as North Dakota's sole voice, I'll be doing a cost-benefit analysis. And with this, I would have supported the funding to Ukraine. We either stop the war now and help fund it, or we potentially fight it here on our land. Russia needs to be stopped now. And it's easy to say, oh, we want to cut spending. But when you look at it, if we wouldn't have been funding this, there's a possibility the price would have been significantly more, and blood, even more blood, would have been shed. So I would support it.
Rick Becker.
No, I would not support sending money to Ukraine. It's crazy to me that a nation in as much debt as we are, $34, $35 trillion in debt, that we would take on more debt to send to a country that we know is rife with corruption. When I talk with people, I was in Watford City recently, we talked about that, and I assured them I would not send their taxpayer dollars when they're having difficulty buying groceries, paying their mortgage. I would not send their money overseas with no accountability, no oversight, no intention to repay it back. To me, it's unconscionable. It just shows how willing my opponents are to take on more debt and how they would just collapse under the pressure when it comes to spending more and more and more at the expense of our taxpayers.
I have a follow-up for Mr. Becker. Do you think Ukraine could hold off the Russians without American assistance, assuming that's what you would like to do?
I don't think Ukraine can hold off the Russians with or without American assistance.
Yeah, and once again, we're right back to a lack of understanding and experience when it comes to foreign policy, because clearly the Ukraine soldiers can hold off the Russians and win this and push them back and defend their sovereignty and stop another slaughter of civilians and women and children with our assistance or with NATO's assistance. So if you haven't been there, you just don't know. If you haven't served, you just don't understand it. And I'm going to press that point, because when you go out and pander to people, wherever you're doing it in North Dakota, and you sell it in one sentence, you're going to get their support. But you need to explain it to them, because they don't want an unsecure Europe. And you go back to what Reagan said, their security, their democracy is our security and democracy. So go back and read your history, and you'll see you need to support it.
I agree. That would be very short-sighted to be pulling back our engagement internationally. The world is getting smaller. We have to be engaged. We have to be engaged smartly, and there does need to be accountability for how these dollars are spent. But we have to be engaged. We have to support our allies. We have to support Israel, and that's another area where Rick Becker has been very soft. Israel is our only ally in the Middle East. They're in the central part of where a lot of the terrorism starts. We have got to shore up Israel and support them without reservation and with strong accountability, of course, and smartly, but we have to support our allies and be engaged smartly and strongly internationally as the leader of the world.
You're listening to a live congressional debate with the four Republican candidates for North Dakota's congressional seat, originating from the KFGO studios in South Fargo. We have Julie Fedorchek, Alex Balazs, Cara Mund, and Rick Becker. I'm Paul Juergens, the news director at KFGO, Jim Shaw with Forum Communications, and Amy Dalrymple with the North Dakota Monitor. Amy Dalrymple with the next question.
Thank you. Switching gears a little bit, I'm wondering what your priorities would be for Indian country if you're elected. And I'll start with Alex Balazs.
Thank you. So I've been up to Turtle Mountain talking with folks up there and out to Spirit Lake, working to get over the MHA. So what I see mostly that they want up there, and there are a lot of conservatives in Indian country or on the reservations or the nations. And what they want is they want to get out of this over large money that the Democrats just throw at them and make them subservient to them and keep them poor. They want to work. I talked to the HR manager at the casino up there. He's very conservative, and he said every single person up there wants a job and they want to work. They want light industry. They want to be part of the community. And every single one will tell you, when we sit with the councils, they'll say, we're Americans, we're Native Americans, we're citizens of North Dakota and citizens of America, and we vote and we want to change things. But what's happened is we just ignored them. You have to sit with them and talk with them, and you have to bring them into the community, not just simply do handouts. And Chuck Schumer was just shameless the other day when he goes out to the American nations, or the Indian tribes, and throws money at them to keep them under the fist again. Well, we'll take care of you. We'll give you money. That's not the way it should be. Conservatives need to step up. We need to bring them back in, because they are a contributing part of America.
Cara Mund?
Yeah, at our first all-candidate debate, in which Rick and Alex and myself were there, they asked us what committees we would want to join, and I was the only candidate who said I wanted to join the House Indian and Insular Affairs Committee. During my last race, I spent quite a bit of time on our tribal lands, and the issue that they said to me that was the most important is tribal sovereignty. But not just that, making sure that we actually have a representative who represents all, who doesn't just show up when it's election time every 2 years, someone who's really a voice for them, but while still keeping tribal sovereignty. And so that's what I see as an importance, and I was the only candidate to actually say I want to give a voice to our tribal nations.
Rick Becker?
Yeah, it's quite concerning to me what has been happening for decades now on the reservations. It's a system which clearly fosters a great deal of unhealthiness in the form of domestic abuse and suicide and alcoholism. It's really, really tragic. It is tragic for any group of people, and I think that it's there, it's present and exists because of the federal programs, the federal policies that have been in place for the last 100 years. What we need to do is start focusing on what we can do to restore the dignity of Native Americans in the United States. My first step is property rights. And I think that that's, it really comes down to the core of it. We can get into the nuts and bolts, but with very little in the way of property rights, there's very little incentive then to do what we do in a free society anywhere in the world, where you have property, you can pass it on, you can build upon it, you can have a free enterprise type of system. That's where it starts.
Julie Fedorchuk.
This is an exciting area for great opportunity and growth, in my opinion. What do the Native Americans in our state want? I think they want jobs and they want opportunities. They want to be able to raise their families in a healthy environment where they can take care of them themselves and offer them hope for the future. I, too, have met with several of our Native American leaders in the last couple of months. And more importantly, I've been working with them in my role as a public service commissioner for the last 12 years. One of the areas where I think that our tribal communities can have a lot of opportunity is in energy development. Our country is hungry for energy, any kind of energy that can be produced, and they have great opportunities to develop the natural resources of our tribal nations in North Dakota from energy and agriculture. So those would be the areas that I would be working with them on to create more jobs and opportunity, help them to be independent, have healthy families, healthy incomes, safe communities, and really provide a vibrant opportunity for those tribal communities in our state.
Governor Burgum is considered a potential running mate of former President Trump, vice presidential running mate, also under consideration perhaps for a cabinet post, whether that be Energy Secretary, Department of Interior. Where in a second Trump administration would any of you candidates believe that if Trump were to be reelected, should the governor land or should he come home? We'll direct that to Alex.
Okay. I don't know Doug personally, but if you look at his record on energy and what he's done in North Dakota, there are conflicting reports about who supports him and doesn't support him, right? And people get all upset and they tie him emotionally to Gates and do a lot of stuff like that. So let's get past all those discussions and say, if you've run state effectively and you've developed energy out here, perhaps you'd be a good energy person for Trump, perhaps maybe an ambassador into one of the Middle Eastern countries, because he would be a known name and face, and then they could bring those people back and they could talk to North Dakota and they could see our energy and maybe share some technology. But that's going to be a decision that's made as a cabinet position for Trump. And as someone working in Congress, I don't see those positions as just solely to North Dakota. You know, if you really want an energy czar, I know a guy from Halliburton out in Williston who's really a great guy because he knows more about oil than probably Doug will ever know. But the reality is that North Dakotans want a voice, right? That's what you're asking me. Should we send the former governor back there so North Dakota gets a better voice in Washington, D.C.? You don't just need that. You need a congressman to go back there and serve.
Go ahead, Julie.
Are we not going down, or how are we doing it?
Kara Muntz, you in, please.
Yeah, I was very supportive of Governor Burgum in both of his elections while he was serving as governor. I do have significant concerns when you are on the North Dakota taxpayer dollar and you are campaigning for Trump. You're showing up at trials. I think this just proves how crucial it is to have someone who's going to stand firm and who's willing to go against Trump to do what's best for North Dakota. you know, at this point, I do see him as becoming a rubber stamp for Trump. I still respect him. I think he still has the opportunity to change course, but I don't think he's giving a voice to North Dakotans. And what you have witnessed, if you're upset with the decisions and the actions of Governor Burgum, and you don't think that he should be taking North Dakota tax dollars, then I think you need to see that I am the only candidate in this race that is your candidate, because my three opponents here will do exactly what Doug Burgum is doing if Trump is elected in November.
Dr. Fecker.
Yeah, I'm probably like to see Doug stay at home. I would like to see Vivek Ramaswamy have a much stronger presence in the Trump administration. I think Vivek represents America First in the same fashion that President Trump does, and I think that would be fantastic for the United States. I'd like to pivot just to one thing earlier, Julie, and she likes to repeat something about trust, a mantra about trust. You can't trust Rick. And I think that my 10 years in the legislature shows otherwise. But what I'd like to point out is Julie talks about that, and yet I have difficulty trusting Julie. There are a lot of concerns I have with conflict of interest. She takes money from the industries she regulates. For example, in September of 2014, North American Coal donated $10,000 to her, and then the next month, lo and behold, a new mine is approved for them. In July of 2016, a NextEra wind farm was approved under Julie, and then on Christmas Day, $5,000. And now Julie is advocating for the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline. She got paid $22,000 for it. And in her own words, she says, "We won't get any more additional money from the company unless the pipeline is completed and that project moves forward." I find I have great difficulty with trusting Julie on those issues.
Okay, so I want to have two shots. I want to be able to respond to that, and I want to be able to answer the original question. Okay.
The next.
All right. So first of all of my campaign donations have been taken and reported transparently through all of the requirements of North Dakota law, and I've been elected three times by the citizens of this state who trust me and know that when I have a conflict like I did with the Carbon Summit, I recuse myself, and I'm not a decision maker. So there's no conflict there. The only thing my husband and I did was what any landowner can do in North Dakota is make decisions based on the best interest of your land and your family and the investment in that you've made. So that's our right as private property owners, and I have 100% recused myself anytime I had any sort of a conflict of interest. So regarding the Trump, do I have time now or should we come back?
Quickly, please.
President Trump, we need President Trump in office. We absolutely need him. Doug Burgum understands that. That's why he's out there fighting for him. He understands what North Dakota was like before with Trump and what it's like under Biden. And Biden has been coming after our key industries in full force for the entire time he's been in office. And let me tell you, it's tough. Our energy sector, which creates more than 50% of our state budget, comes from the energy sector. They are in the crosshairs of Biden. There are two rules just this last week that have targeted coal. And if they go through as planned, they will shut down our coal industry, create grave problems for our energy sector nationwide. The reliability and affordability of energy, which is the foundation for everything we do, we can't do without it. And Governor Burgum understands that and is a very strong advocate for energy policy, smart energy policy in this country. I think he should be vice president. And if he isn't a vice president, he should be interior secretary so he can rein in the out-of-control agencies that are damaging and destroying North Dakota's key industries.
You are listening to a live debate featuring four of the five Republican candidates for North Dakota's U.S. House seat. The candidates with us, Alex Balazs, Rick Becker, Julie Fedorchuk, and Carl Mund. I'm Paul Juergens, the news director at KFGO. Amy Dalrymple of the North Dakota Monitor is here, along with Jim Shaw of Form Communications. We were discussing the potential for Doug Burgum in a potential future Trump administration, a second administration, and Carl Mund did not get to answer that question.
Oh, I didn't to answer, yeah. But I do want to do rebuttal.
You want to follow up on that?
Yes. I know Rick expressed concerns about Julie's conflict of interest of the CO2 pipeline and how she is personally financially benefiting. I also have significant concerns about someone on the Public Service Commission signing an agreement with a private company while landowners in North Dakota are concerned about eminent domain and the ability to potentially lose their land rights. And so I'm really curious how much land Julie has that's personally financially benefiting her through the CO2 pipeline.
That has been disclosed previously, if you'd like to.
Absolutely. Actually, I don't have any involvement in the CO2 pipeline at all. So that's just a misinformation that's been.
But at the end product, the disposal?
We are in the storage facility. Yep, storage facility. And so when the CO2 comes through the pipeline, which is not on our land, to our land, it would be stored in on our land. So, again, I believe private property rights are paramount, and eminent domain should only be used in a very last resort, not to start projects, but to finish projects. And so I've been very clear about that. And again, I'm recused on that case. I don't have a thing to do with the pipeline case at all.
But my question, and I agree, eminent domain is a massive concern for North Dakota. My question is, how much land are you personally financially benefiting off of?
Cara, I what difference does how much land we own have to do with it? I've recused myself from the case. We have about 800 acres is how much land we owned, and we bought that land long before I was on the PSC because my husband and I wanted our kids to be connected to rural America. We wanted to have them connected to agriculture, and we wanted to teach them to work. And, you know, as private property owners, you get to use your property for your own benefit. It's an investment. We've invested money in that land. So, yes, it's our right to sign an agreement just like any other landowner gets to sign an agreement with a company to help to invest in our land. That's our right as private property owners, as any private property owner in the state gets to do. And again, as a public servant, you have to balance these things. And I've recused myself, so I have no oversight of that company, don't now and never will.
Okay, I just want to say I actually have the draft storage facility permit that was published on April 15th. Julie Fedorchuk and her husband are listed on it three different times for three land descriptions. She's personally benefiting by 640 acres. And I think it's really interesting. You buy this land in 2012. You're then appointed to the PSC in 2013. This private company just happens to come to you and want to put a very controversial CO2 pipeline on your land, which you then signed a contract with as a member of the PSC and got a payment for. You know, that's a lot of coincidences. And now you don't even want to finish your term that you were elected to by the North Dakota voters. And why is that? Is it because you already got your payday? And now you want to go to the federal level and do more tax credits and more paydays? Is that what it is? Because this seems like a lot of coincidences, and I do. I have significant concerns of a conflict of interest, and I think this is something that Rick and I both agree on. And I think it's important that voters know when I asked her how much land, she wouldn't answer it. So again, do you trust her? Do you want truth, transparency, or accountability?
I'll respond to that. I mean, obviously, Cara is creating this big phony line of attack because she doesn't have anything to talk about herself, about her own accomplishments and her own service. And so, again, I'll come back to you. I am a trusted elected leader in North Dakota. I follow the rules of engagement. I have a long history of good conservative results. I have saved taxpayers $50 million in utility rates. I have consistently fought back on Biden and Obama administration's efforts to shut down our energy and fossil fuel industries. That's why both the energy industry and the coal industry have endorsed me, and I have many, many endorsements throughout the state, both from working class folks and leaders. So I have a strong record of results, and I have always operated with high integrity and under the, you know, following all the rules and laws. So this is just a phony attack to try
to clarify
make up for her lack of accomplishments.
we need to clear up just a little bit what we're talking about, because Julie talks about recusing herself from the sighting. The problem I have, and the how disingenuous she is with this, yes, she recused herself. However, in her capacity as public service commissioner, she is continually advocating for the pipeline. And as I said in her own words, when the pipeline is completed, the project is done, they will get paid more money every year. She advocated, even testifying in a legislative committee hearing, in 2023, Senate Bill 2314, which would have imposed restrictions for the use of eminent domain, which she said she's against. She wanted that bill killed, and she said, as utility regulators, you see, this is her capacity, as utility regulators, we see the need for this infrastructure, this pipeline. It delivers reliable service, energy service, to people that we all rely on. Those are her words, her quote. She's benefiting herself by advocating in this position.
Again, that's actually taken out of context. And again, Rick also wants to distract from his record, his very poor record of flip-flopping on issues time and again, and poor relationships with his colleagues, and just not being somebody who can be trusted to get the job done for North Dakota. I love this line of questioning, so I hope you guys keep it up, because it lets me talk about one of the most important issues in our country and in our state, and that is energy. And I will always be a strong advocate for energy development, the need for energy infrastructure to serve our citizens. It affects everything we do, from the cost of groceries to the cost of gas. We have to be bullish about developing our energy resources, and that requires infrastructure. That has been my record of results in the PSC, and that is why, again, those big industries in our state know me. They know I have a national reputation for this, and they support me.
One thing I'll say is I don't agree with Rick on a lot of things, but he does own his record. And I gave Julie the opportunity twice now to come forward with the answer, to answer the questions and to be truthful and honest, and she didn't do it. And for you to say I lack accomplishments is appalling to me. I'm a Harvard-educated lawyer. I'm the only lawyer here, and I'm the one calling out your conflict of interest, and so is Rick. So don't turn it and say that I'm not an accomplished woman, because of anything, I've been on the national stage. I've made history for North Dakota, and I'm proud to bring out truth and transparency, which you are clearly trying to hide from the North Dakota voter.
Shall we move on?
All right. Sean. Thank you. This question, the first person to answer will be Kara Mund. Experts say Social Security will be out of cash reserves in less than 10 years. Economists say there are three options to address this problem. Either raise the cap on taxable earnings, as currently only the first $168,000 of a person's earned income is taxed for Social Security, or you can raise the age that a person can receive Social Security benefits, or you can cut benefits. Assuming you want to save Social Security, which option would you choose? And again, we'll start with Kara Mund.
Yeah, I've been a huge advocate that I agree we need to cut spending, but we do not cut it in Social Security. We do not cut it in Medicare. We don't cut it in veterans benefits. These are not handouts from the government, and I'm curious how my opponents are going to spin this time. I mean, these are something that you have paid into, and it's crucial that it's still available for my generation, right? I'm paying into Social Security right now, and I want to know that when I'm of age to be able to collect it, it's still there. And so my solution, and you know, this is a very complex problem, but you do need to raise the cap. You need to raise the cap. You need to potentially look at the possibility of a donut, where after potentially $400,000, we put the tax back in. I mean, we have to do something, but the solution is not to cut it. It's not to slash government. And I believe up to this point, I have been the only candidate who's been very truthful and honest in that Social Security, Medicare, and veteran benefits are something that I will protect and I will not cut.
Thank you. Rick Becker.
Yes, I just will say one thing. It was mentioned about my record. I just want to be really clear. I have a 100% rating by the American Conservative Union. You cannot get better than that. To your question, with Social Security, I agree that we want to keep people whole who are in the system, who rely on the system. When we talk about modifying, reforming, and improving the system, we are not talking about changing it. At least I am not talking about changing it for people who depend on it now. But if we don't do something, it's not going to be there for my kids, and it certainly won't be there for my grandkids. We have to do something. So while maintaining the system for the people who rely on it, we can do some things. Increasing the age by a year to 68 will actually take care of 15% of the problem alone. But if we can start to convert, invest in it, and convert over to a hybrid model and then a personal 401k style model, so that we know that the money we put in there will still be there, because it's not there now. It's a Ponzi scheme. And so it will take a lot of effort, but it can be done. It's going to take a lot of time.
Thank you. Julie Fedorchak.
Thank you, Jim. This is a great question, and it's been a problem in our country for many years. I remember Kent Conrad, when he was serving in the Senate, talking about the need to fix Social Security and make it solvent long term. So obviously, if this was easy, it would have already been done. This is one of those issues where we are going to have to roll up our sleeves and really get to work. You suggested three options for how it can be addressed. I believe that there are more than that, and my approach to Social Security will be to sit down, like I do on any hard issue, and I've dealt with lots of them over my careers, sit down with the people who are need to be at the table. We need to bring the stakeholders together, including big groups like the AARP, who the last time there was a solution on the table fought against it, and so it didn't go anywhere. We need to bring the stakeholders together, look at all the options on the table, and come up with some sort of sustainable long-term reforms that are passed in a bipartisan way, so this thing doesn't continue to be a political football, because it is essential for people. People depend on it, and we need to do our work. We need to do our work rolling up our sleeves and putting politics aside and fixing this and solving this problem.
Thank you. Alex Balazs.
Yeah, Jim, I disagree with your experts there. I talked with the AARP the other day and read a little bit more on it, and then talked to one economist who said that there are other ways that we can do this. So let's talk about those. So first of all, we're not touching Social Security. We're not extending the goalposts again so somebody who's been planning to retire can retire. We're not going to do those things. You need to look at the government and understand where the funding comes from. Keep that fund, that Social Security fund, whole, and keep it where it is. Now, if you want to talk about perhaps and go into the voters and talking about young people just entering the workforce, entering under a different system than Social Security, whether that's a thrift system that we have in the federal government or some kind of 401k process, that's fine to do. But we're not going to take this and just change it, because a couple of experts said we have to do the following. And if you really want to look at it, we've been doing this for 30 years, saying it's going to crash next year and it's going to crash next year. So half of this is people doing it so they can get votes at the next election. And that's the Democrats saying, oh, it's going to crash, and we're the only ones that can save you. So let's remove that from the table and let's get serious about it. Because you know you can save this fund, and you can do it with good management.
All right, I just want to ask a follow-up.
Yes, sir.
So what specifically, I don't think I've heard a specific plan from you, what specifically is your plan to keep Social Security afloat?
Pull money that's being wasted in the government right now, like on the foreign border, on the southern border, and paying all these illegals, and start reinfusing that fund. If you look at the government right now, you can pull all those things off. Pull the government, a whole of government approach that Biden laid over every single agency to do election integrity, pull those funds and push them over there. You need to get into this budget in the weeds and pull funds and redistribute them where they need to be. And that means you already have taxpayer dollars. Why shouldn't it be in Social Security? When we're sitting down with the AARP, they get it. They know the funds are there in the government. So why aren't we doing that? And we need to do it because it's a hard thing to do, because half of the government wants to make this a crisis. We're not going to do that. We're going to make it something we need to solve, and we're going to work toward the solution.
Thank you. Any candidate want to offer a rebuttal?
You're listening to a live congressional debate with four of the five Republican hopefuls for North Dakota seat in the U.S. House. June 11th is the primary election. The next question from Amy Dalrymple of the North Dakota Monitor.
Thank you. Do any of the candidates support any federal restrictions on access to contraception and access to medication abortion for the states where it's currently legal? And I'll start with Rick Becker.
I am not in favor of restricting access to contraception. I am opposed to abortion medication.
I am also not supporting any restrictions on contraception, but I do oppose the abortion medication. And I here's where I stand on pro-life, and this is a really important issue that we haven't talked about yet. I'm pro-life. I've been a strong defender of life my whole adult life. And I come at that because I think it is the best approach for humanity, supporting life. And recently, the Susan B. Anthony Association endorsed me for this race because of my strong pro-life positions. Most importantly, in the U.S., we need to work on a culture of life and building a culture of life so women in troubled pregnancies have the support to make thoughtful, fair decisions that they think are right, that they know that they have more than one choice, that they can choose life. And then we need to support them in the effort to choose life so that they can bring a baby to term and help provide that opportunity for somebody else to adopt if they aren't able to have children themselves. But this is something that I think can be a real positive for our country moving forward, and it's something that I'm really, really excited as a lone voice for North Dakota to work on.
Alex Velaz.
Yeah, thanks. I'm pro-life from conception to death, and I feel that in North Dakota they've got the argument correct when they put through the law and they said that the doctors need not to do that and they can be criminally prosecuted, but I am not in support of criminally prosecuting mothers for that. So let's talk about this. It is a moderate Democrat position. It's a moderate position to say and pander to women that you're protecting women's rights if you give them pro-choice, and that is simply wrong. Conservative Republicans need to stand up for women, and they need to say, we're going to take care of these moms, and we're not doing enough of that. It's not enough just to say, oh, we're not going to approve. I don't agree with a federal any kind of federal bans or on any of this stuff. It's a states' rights issue, and this needs to be pushed down to the states. I should have said that first. But the issue here is we get into this mix, and then people pander to women and say, oh, well, we're going to support your rights, and we're going to throw you into the arms of the Democrats who will give you an abortion at will, who will kill your child, and they'll do it under the guise of, oh, we're helping you, we're protecting you, you can go back to work now, we'll take care of you. And that's not where we need to be. Republican conservatives need to take care of moms, and we can do that.
Karamand?
I agree. Conservatives need to stand up for moms. And all of my opponents are so ignorant to the issues currently facing women in our state. We do not have a clinic that does elective abortion procedures. Julie just used the term trouble pregnancies. That includes pregnancies that are not viable. Right now, we have doctors in North Dakota who do not want to practice in North Dakota because of the restrictions placed on their license. This is women's health care. The term for a miscarriage is a spontaneous abortion. I mean, I don't know anyone who's out here advocating for abortions. You're all so ignorant to the real issues. The fact that women could be dying, having to carry a fetus that's not going to make it and potentially wreck her chance of ever being able to have children in the future. And now we have resolutions about IVF. Not only is it if you can't do it naturally, we're also going to prohibit you from being able to try to conceive in other ways to continue to grow families. I mean, it is so frustrating as the only candidate on here protecting women's health care to watch another candidate who, when she had pregnancies, when she had children, she had the rights to get the Medicare assistance that she needed, the health care assistance she needed. And I don't expect Rick or Alex to know because they don't have a uterus. But it is so frustrating, again, to be the only woman in this room advocating for women like me who want to have children, who may not be able to have children, who might have miscarriages. I mean, what does this mean? Does this mean that when a woman has a miscarriage, we're going to look at the possibility of if it even was a miscarriage? We're going to sit and we're going to take the trauma that this woman goes through because we want to say it's a state right, which then turn around like Julie Fedorchuk has and say we also want a federal ban. You don't get it both ways. And I am so proud to be the only candidate here supporting women. And I agree. As conservatives, we need to advocate for women, and I'm the only one doing it.
I'll respond to that. So I've been on record supporting exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. And so much of what was just discussed was would fall into the category of life of the mother. But I do think it's really sad to see a quote-unquote conservative, quote-unquote Republican candidate, Kara Mund, and taking on the liberal left euphemisms of that abortion is women's health care. women's health care is so much broader than abortions. And I really reject that kind of a euphemism to soften the use of the word abortion. The women's health care includes, you know, mammography, it includes mental health, it includes osteoporosis. There's so much more involved in supporting women and women's health care. And I believe that supporting women to choose life is the best for women, especially baby girls who are in the uterus.
As a conservative, I support limited government, and all of you want to be in spaces that the government should not be. The government should not be in your bedroom. They should not be in your doctor's appointments. These are decisions between the patient and the doctor. And you're saying women's health care, that includes IVF. That includes the life of the mother. You're right. And exceptions, how do we enforce the exceptions? There's 6 weeks. How do you prove incest when it's a he versus she situation? How do you prove rape when it's a he versus she situation? Again, there's such ignorance to how this is actually going to play out in the courts. And this is women's reproductive health care when we do not have a clinic doing elective procedures.
Quickly, Dr. Becker.
Yes, Amy, I answered your question quite succinctly, but I wanted to go on the record. I am absolutely pro-life. I have a 100% rating by North Dakota Right to Life, and I have been endorsed by the large and prominent national organization, Students for Life.
And for the North Dakota... I do want to just mention there, and I really appreciate that Rick converted, because that's what being pro-life is all about. You want to embrace the conversion stories. But I do have to say that, you know, it is something that he was very actively opposed to early on in his career. And it shows just another example of him changing. He was pro-choice, now he's pro-life. He was against crop insurance, now he's for crop insurance. He's been for Israel, and he said,
"No, that's
money to Israel is
not
a bunch
true.
Of bull
absolutely
crap."
Not
so
true.
It's just a matter
absolutely
of trust.
Not
is
true.
What
I'll tell you though is, you're right. When it came to the 2013, 11 years ago, votes on abortion, I voted wrong. I said so shortly after in 2014. I've maintained a strong pro-life position since that time. And so it's interesting you're talking about flip-flopping after you gave your blog in 2009, where you discussed that it was important and you wished there was a world in which everyone would accept Roe v. Wade and women would continue to have choice.
Actually, that's not at all what the blog said, but I'm glad you brought the blog up, because I will be posting that on my website, julie4nd.com. And I would invite everybody to read that blog, because I have showed it to the Susan B. Anthony Foundation, many pro-life leaders in the state, and many of them see it as just what it was, yet another example of me being a problem solver and looking for ways to support a culture of life. That is the entire intent of that article. And you can spin it all you want. I would invite people to read it for yourself, because that has never been what I said, and it's not what I said there. And it again reinforces my commitment to a culture of life, to helping move people away from these strident positions to embracing what we can do in this country by embracing women and helping them choose life. It's a win-win for everybody.
We need to get two closing arguments from the candidates. 1 minute. We hope they can limit their closing arguments to 1 minute, and we'll start with Dr. Rick Becker.
Thank you. My opponents have called me too conservative, too far right. They say I'm too much of a fighter. I won't compromise. And they're right. And I don't apologize for that. The voters of North Dakota have a great selection of candidates to choose from. Julie Fedorchuk is more of the establishment status quo candidate. Cara Mund is more of the pro-choice, little iffy on Trump candidate. Alex Balazs, polling at 5%, whether you like him or not, statistically cannot win with only 2.5 weeks left. And then Rick Becker, I'm a principled conservative with a record of not compromising, a reputation for being a fighter. That's what we need in Congress. That's what I will be in Congress, and that's how we will secure the border, and we will get inflation under control.
Thank you. Cara Mund.
Yes, in this debate, you heard that none of my opponents are supporting the women in your life, your wives, your daughters, your granddaughters, who may be facing complex pregnancies or the ability to even get pregnant. To me, women's health care is not a political issue. All of my opponents are here to be a puppet for Trump and not to represent the people of North Dakota. As North Dakota's lone voice, I will protect and secure the border. I will combat inflation. I will make sure that North Dakota's energy independence is upheld. I'll reduce reckless spending. But I am the only candidate who will uphold law and order and that no one is above the law, and the only candidate to advocate for limited government and keeping the government out of your doctor's appointments and supporting women's reproductive health care. I am proud to be the only true moderate in this race of four far-right candidates. I will have the strongest voice in Congress reaching across the aisle and making sure that North Dakotans, all North Dakotans, are heard. It is an honor to be part of this debate and hopefully to have earned your vote on June 11th.
Candidate Alex Palaz.
Thanks. So Alex Palaz talking to North Dakotans as a GOP-endorsed candidate. And what I'll say to you out there is... You know, of all the topics we talked about, I'm the only one with the experience who's been on the border, worked overseas in foreign diplomacy, and worked in Washington, D.C., and you have a choice to make. So I'm actually running a pretty big statewide poll coming up, and it's going to be asking North Dakotans who they want to go to Washington as their congressman. Do they want someone with experience who's been there and get a job done on day one, or are they going to pick somebody else who they know or have worked with in the past? So the question really is, on June 11th, when you take that poll, you get one vote to take the poll, and I'll be your one vote in Washington, D.C. So I'm going to do a quick shout-out to the Legion up in Candu, to Troy, our commander, and Derek and Ted and Donnie and all the women of the Great Auxiliary up there. We're going into Memorial Day, and I want everybody to take a minute, pause, think about all those people that made the sacrifice, go out, take a knee, maybe say a prayer, or maybe you're going to the lake to celebrate their life the way you knew them. Do that and continue to serve, because everybody serves in their own way, and we'll make a country really great.
Public Service Commissioner Julie Fedorchak.
Thank you, KFGO, and fellow opponents for this lively debate. Yes, voting has already started. Some have already started voting. Some have already cast their votes. I'm speaking to those of you who haven't voted yet. North Dakotans are concerned, and many of them are suffering because of the terrible leadership of Joe Biden and what he's done to this country. The borders, the budget, inflation is crushing our families. As a mother of three, I know this. I have a long record of serving this state with conservative results. It's easy to talk. It's easy to promise. It's a lot harder to deliver results, and I have a good, strong record of them. We have the lowest utility rates in the nation. I have pushed back consistently on the Obama and Biden administrations trying to shut down our key industries. This is an election of who are you going to trust? Who are you going to trust to be our lone voice in the U.S. House, the voice for farmers and ranchers, the voice for our oil and gas, the voice for parents and family, the voice for coal. I will be a tireless fighter and ambassador for the conservative solutions that I know our nation needs and are the responses and the solutions to the problems that we face.
You've been listening to a live congressional debate with the North Dakota Republican candidates on the June 11th ballot. North Dakota will decide again on June 11th. I'm Paul Juergens, the news director at KFGO. Jim Shaw, Foreign Communications, has been another moderator, along with Amy Dalrymple of the North Dakota Monitor. Paul Juergens, KFGO News.